Okay, let's unpack this. We've got a stack of sources today covering what looks to be one of the biggest architectural shifts we've seen in consumer GPUs in years. We're talking about NVIDIA's Blackwell and specifically the expected flagship, the RTX 5090 Ti. And this thing, it's not just another graphics card, it feels more like an industrial declaration. So our mission today is to get past the usual performance hype. We really want to dig into the engineering blueprint. Why did they take all these incredible efficiency gains from the new silicon and just spend it all on creating a 600-watt monster? And what does that actually mean for your hardware, your home, and yeah, your wallet?
It's a great question because it really comes down to a fundamental choice NVIDIA made. With this new 3-nanometer process, they could have gone one of two ways. Do you take that efficiency and make a cooler, maybe smaller, less power-hungry card? Or do you pour all of it, every last drop, into raw horsepower?
And the sources are pretty clear they went with the second option, maximum dominance.
That's it, exactly. Every single spec we're looking at, from the memory to the power draw, it all flows from that one decision. They pick performance over efficiency, and that creates some really fascinating challenges for you, the user.
Okay, so let's start the foundation, the silicon itself. Let's look at the raw numbers comparing Ada Lovelace-O, the RTX 4090, to these rumored specs for the 5090 Ti. The scale of Blackwell is just wow. First up, lithography. We're moving from the 4-millimeter process in Ada to a 3-nanometer TSMC process for Blackwell. That's a big deal, lets you pack transistors way tighter. But where you really see the jump is what they do with those
Oh,
transistors.
absolutely. Look at the VRAM. The 4090 has 24 gigs of GDDR6X. The 5090 Ti is rumored to have 32 gigabytes of the new GDDR7.
So a 33% capacity bump, which is nice, but the speed is the real story here.
The speed is everything. It's a 50% increase in raw speed, which lets the total memory bandwidth almost double.
So we're going from what, 1.0 terabyte per second on the 4090?
To a predicted 1.8 terabytes per second on the 5090 Ti. It's an enormous data pipeline.
And why is that doubling so important? Why does it matter so much?
Because memory bandwidth is almost always the bottleneck at really high resolutions. You know, your cores can be screaming fast, but if they can't get the data, the textures, all of it in and out fast enough, you get stutters, you get latency, especially when you're pushing past 4K.
So they're just making sure the core never ever starves for data.
Exactly. Even for like future 8K games with massive textures. And then we get to the number everyone's talking about, the power.
The TDP. The 4090 was already a beast at 450 watts. Blackwell is jumping to 600
That's
watts.
a 150-watt increase, and that has to go somewhere. That's heat, pure heat.
And that 150 watts is the clearest evidence of that trade-off you mentioned.
It is. The move to 3 nanometers is supposed to make things cooler, more efficient, but they just packed so many more cores onto the die, ran them faster, and basically ate up all those efficiency gains and then some.
So it's more efficient per transistor, but there are just so many more of them that the total power goes through the roof.
It's a brute force approach, pure and simple. It's all about winning benchmarks. Which brings us to the architecture itself. Blackwell is named after David Blackwell, the mathematician, and the entire philosophy seems to be HPC first.
High performance computing. So design for data centers, then scale it down for us gamers.
And that HPC background really explains the most interesting new bit of silicon on this thing, the dedicated AI hardware.
Okay, so previously, Tensor Cores handled things like DLSS frame generation, but Blackwell has a whole new dedicated block of silicon just for real-time frame generation, a neural frame gen core, you could call it.
And that's the secret sauce. What's so fascinating is the physical isolation of that function. In the old way, rendering is a pipeline, right? Geometry, textures, then at the very end, the tensor cores jump in to create the extra frames. By giving it a dedicated neural core, they completely decouple frame generation from that main rendering process.
So it's generating frames at the same time, but separately. What does that actually solve?
It solves the biggest problem with DLSS3, input latency.
Ah, the Achilles heel.
Exactly. When frame generation is tied into the main pipeline, it adds a few milliseconds of lag. It's small, but for competitive players, it's a real penalty. With an isolated core, the sources are suggesting that latency penalty drops to, well, theoretically, to near zero in DLSS 4.0.
So the card isn't just rendering what you tell it to. It's using AI to perfectly predict and generate the frames between the rendered ones almost instantly. That's where that phrase from the source, hallucinating pixels with perfect accuracy, comes from.
It's a predictive AI engine running live. And that kind of real-time communication points to another huge design choice, one that directly impacts that 600-watt number, the die strategy.
Right, the monolithic die. So while competitors are moving to chiplets, NVIDIA is sticking with one massive single piece of silicon.
They are. Chiplets are generally cheaper, easier to manufacture, you get better
So
yields.
why stick with monolith?
One reason, and one reason only: ultra-low latency. When everything, the cores, the memory controllers, this new neural core is on one piece of silicon, data transfer is basically instantaneous. There are no bridges to cross between chiplets. You get maximum speed.
But it's harder to make, more expensive, and it concentrates the heat.
It absolutely concentrates the heat. A chiplet design spreads the load. A monolithic die puts all 600 watts of heat in one spot. This is why the cooling has to be so extreme, and it leads directly into the biggest problem for you as a builder: the power demands.
And this is where it gets really critical for anyone thinking about this upgrade, because that 600-watt TDP number, it's misleading.
It's very misleading. That's just the average power. The cooler has to handle the average. We need to talk about transient spikes.
This is what catches so many people out.
It does. A GPU doesn't pull power in a nice flat line. You hit a big explosion in a game, a sudden complex scene, and for a few milliseconds, the GPU demands a massive instant burst of power.
And these spikes can be, what, double the rated TDP?
Up to double, yeah. So for a 600-watt card, you're talking about instant spikes hitting 1,000, maybe even 1,200 watts, just for a moment.
And that's the moment your PC dies.
That's the moment of chaos. See, your power supply unit, your PSU, have protective circuits. So if you're running a really nice but older 1,000-watt ATX 2.0 unit and the GPU suddenly screams for 1,200 watts.
The PSU thinks it's a short circuit.
Exactly. It trips the overpower protection, the OPP, and your PC just hard shuts down instantly. It's doing its job, but it can't tell the difference between a dangerous short and a power-hungry GPU.
Wow. So your brand new system just collapses, not because anything is faulty, but because your PSU is too protective.
The sources are crystal clear on this. This isn't a suggestion, it's a requirement. You need an ATX 3.1 certified power supply, at least 1,200 watts. That certification is key because they are specifically built to handle those huge transient spikes without tripping.
So trying to reuse your old PSU, even a good one, is just asking for trouble.
A recipe for endless, frustrating shutdowns.
Okay, that is vital information. Let's circle back to the memory for a second, because the tech that enables that 1.8 terabytes per second, GDDR7, is kind of the unsung hero here.
It absolutely is. The move to GDDR7 is more than just a speed bump. It's a whole new way of transmitting data.
They're moving from the old NRZ signaling to something called PAM3, pulse amplitude modulation. What on earth does that mean for me?
Okay, think of it like a highway. With the old tech, NRZ, each car on the highway could only be in one of two states, like on or off, a one or a zero.
Binary.
Binary, exactly. PAM3 introduces a third state, so now each car can carry more information per trip. It lets you send more data down the same highway in the same amount of time.
So you're getting more data per clock cycle.
Precisely. It's a 50% efficiency gain right there, just from the signaling. You combine that with the faster clocks, and that's how you get to that crazy 1.8 PB's number.
Which you'll need for games like, say, GTA VI, with its rumored uncompressed high-fidelity textures.
Yeah.
You absolutely will. And for creators, it's a game changer. Imagine scrubbing through an 8K video timeline as smoothly as you do 1080p footage. That's what this kind of bandwidth unlocks.
Okay, speaking of things that needed a change, the connector. The 4090 launch was, well, a nightmare with melting 12 VHPWR connectors. Have they fixed it with this new 12 V2x6 standard?
They had to. I mean, pushing 600 watts through one plug, they had no choice. And yes, they've made two really critical physical changes that target the exact reason the old ones were failing.
It's just mostly user error, right?
Yeah.
The plug wasn't seated all the way, it would arc.
And that's the main fix. The little sense pins on the new 12V2x6 connector are now recessed. They're shorter. So if you don't plug that cable in 100% all the way until it clicks,
It just won't work.
sense pins won't make contact and the card won't draw full power. It might not even turn on. No partial contact, no arcing, no melting. It's a fantastic simple fix for user error.
And the second fix is the materials.
Yep. They're using a higher conductivity copper alloy for the pins. It just reduces the thermal resistance, so even with 600 watts flowing through, it's less likely to build up that dangerous localized heat.
It sounds like a real engineering fix, but still. That is a lot of power going through one little connector.
It is, which is why we have to be cautious. We strongly, strongly advise against using those octopus adapters that come in the box, the ones that take like four old 8-pin cables and merge them.
Why not?
Every connection is a potential point of failure, a point where resistance can build. Since you already have to buy a new ATX 3.1 PSU, Just use the native cable that comes with it. One clean connection from the PSU to the card. It's mandatory for safety.
Which brings us perfectly to the final reality check, the financial hit, what the sources are calling the Blackwell tax. Buying this card at an estimated, what, $2,499, that's just the start.
It's the hidden cost of entry. That 600-watt power draw, it basically invalidates a ton of perfectly good hardware that you already own. You're not just buying a GPU, you're building a whole new support system around it.
Okay, so let's tally this up. First, the PSU. We've established your old one is no good. A new 1200-watt ATX 3.1 unit is, what, $350? Maybe $400?
At least. Then there's the physical size. Rumor is this is a four-slot card, over 350 millimeters long. It's a monster. Most mid-tower cases physically cannot fit this thing.
So you need a new case. There's another $200 minimum just for a box that can hold it and, you know, provide enough airflow so it doesn't cook itself.
It's like buying a supercar and then realizing you have to rebuild your garage to fit it.
Exactly. And then the last one, the cost people don't think about until July, the cooling cost.
600 watts of sustained heat output is a powerful space heater. It's not an analogy, it's physics. It's running right next to your legs.
So without serious room air conditioning, your gaming room is just... it's going to be unusable in the summer.
You're not just paying for the GPU, you're paying the heat tax on your electricity bill that comes with it.
Yeah.
It's a real measurable cost.
So we've laid it all out. The engineering, the tech, the cost. The verdict seems pretty clear. The RTX 5090 Ti isn't a logical product for most people. It's a statement of dominance. It's built to win benchmarks, period.
It's the absolute peak of what's possible in consumer graphics. It's engineering without compromise, and that makes it the perfect card for a very, very small group of users.
So who are those users? Who actually needs this?
Three groups, really. First, the gamer with the absolute best display technology, a 4K 240Hz OLED, or one of those new 8K screens.
Yeah.
Second, the AI dev or data scientist working from home who needs that local compute power.
And the third?
The enthusiast who just has to have ultra max settings in a game like GTA VI. And the cost, financial or otherwise, just doesn't matter.
But for everyone else, the person on a 1440p monitor or even a good 4K 120Hz display.
The consensus seems to be that for 99% of people, the sweet spot is going to be the RTX 5080. It'll have all the key Blackwell architecture, the 3-nanometer chip, the GDDR7, and that all-important neural core. You get the new tech, but without needing to, you know, build a small power plant to run it.
So what does this all mean in the end? We've seen the price of progress quantified not just in dollars, which keep going up, but in watts. We've hit a point where no compromise engineering means exponential infrastructure costs for the user. So is 600 watts just too much for a consumer product? Or is that simply the new price of admission for peak silicon performance? That's something for you to mull over.